Hello everyone, and welcome to a special episode of Go Out and Talk to Strangers. My name is Adi, and I am a nomadic architect and the founder of The New Movement, an architectural design studio that designs one-of-a-kind, innovative, and creative projects worldwide, using the built environment as a tool to help people thrive. Usually, I'm the host of this show. But today, since I'm receiving so many questions from you, I decided to create a special episode. We're going to start with my own personal journey of how I became a nomadic architect, how I discovered my mission, how people are wired, and what is the real purpose of architecture. I'm going to share with you some of the design philosophy behind the new movement and the knowledge and tools that took me nearly 10 years to discover. The kind of tools that we use in the work that we do with our clients. Today's episode is very special for me, and I hope you'll learn something new or gain a new perspective by listening to it. So, shall we begin? The way I got my first job as an architect was like something out of a movie. In my third year of architecture school, I presented one of my projects at an exhibition. A stranger approached it and asked, "Who designed this?" "I did," I answered. The man handed me his business card and invited me to join his firm. I couldn't hide my excitement and gratitude for the opportunity that was given to me. I was eager to become part of a real firm, to take part in real design process, with real clients, and witness how ideas transform into actual buildings. It was a dream come true. To my surprise, I discovered that the reality outside of the academic world was quite different from what I had imagined. The design process was surprisingly short. Bureaucracy and never-ending technical drawings kept us occupied. With time, I noticed that my colleagues seemed tired, almost burned out. They were unhappy on Mondays and couldn't wait to leave on Fridays. And the highlight of the week was if someone had a birthday and there was a cake in the kitchen. The joy of practicing architecture was replaced with some sort of an assembly line. It took me nearly 2 years to admit that I was unhappy. I decided to quit and move to a different firm when I had more creative freedom. I finally started experiencing more joy into day-to-day life as an architect, and I became a partner after a few years. Yet, I kept asking myself, is that all there is? The routine, the fluorescent lights, and the uninspiring office space where we spend most of our time. How am I supposed to be creative if I'm living the same day over and over again? I couldn't help but feeling that I'm slowly fading away. I felt like I was living on 10% of what life has to offer, and I kept wondering how would it feel like to live closer to 50, 60, or even 100%? I felt like I'm waiting to live rather than feeling alive. And then a few things happened. First, my life partner and I decided to split. Then a close friend of mine passed after years of fighting cancer. And it made me realize that I don't want to wait any longer to feel alive. To love waking up in the morning, to feel like the work that I do matters. But I have no idea how would that look like or even how to get there. Let me tell you a little story. So after me and my partner decided to split, I moved to Tel Aviv, to this tiny studio apartment. A week after I moved into that apartment, a 24-hour construction site started working right in front of my window. It doesn't matter what I did, I couldn't escape the noise. Then I moved to a different apartment. On the weekend, I discovered that there is a club next door, and on the weekends, the entire building was shaking. It felt like the city was trying to push me away. And I remember myself carrying my things up and down the stairs, boxes and boxes of items that I wasn't even sure I need anymore. And I kept thinking, what do I have all of this? And what do I really need in order to be happy? So there I was, alone in an apartment surrounded by boxes of items. Nothing made sense anymore. Not Israel, not my job, not this lifestyle. I was craving something different. And even though I wasn't sure exactly what it was, I knew what it didn't. And that's also something important sometimes, knowing what's not working. In that moment, I realized I have an opportunity to do something bold, to break out of the scripts that I didn't even create, to follow my gut instincts for a change. And my gut told me to fulfill an old dream of mine, to travel to places and cultures that are far away, different from the places where I grew up in. So I decided that I'm allowed to get crazy. I decided to sell all my belongings and go on a journey. I had to check for myself what life could look like, if only I'll go into the unknown. Even if that means I had to stop being an architect, it's worth it. Don't get me wrong, the idea of living behind years of studying and working was terrifying, but I couldn't imagine spending my life living the same day over and over again, narrowing down architecture to create uninspiring cookie-cut buildings. I did not know where this journey would take me, or if I'll ever practice architecture again, but I had to try. I had to take that leap of faith and see where it will take me. My friends and family couldn't understand what I was doing. They thought I was crazy, throwing my life away after everything I worked so hard to achieve. But I knew I had to try. I knew that I can't keep living on autopilot, hoping something would change. I knew there is more to life, but I just wasn't sure what is it or where will I find it. So I did the only thing that made sense and got a one-way ticket to Japan. I've always wanted to visit Japan, but I had no clear reason why. I guess I wanted to be a complete stranger, to do something that is so radically different from what I know and where I grew up. I wanted to walk the streets and not understand the language, not to be able to read the letters. I knew I wanted to physically be there and experience it with my own senses. I arrived in Tokyo, and one of my favorite things to do was to get lost on purpose. Each day, I would wake up and choose a spot on Tokyo's map that I haven't been to before, go there and wander around for hours. I loved discovering places with my own senses, just walking without a specific destination in mind, letting my intuition lead the way, my gut feeling to choose which street I'm going to walk next. And this experience completely shifted the way I felt. I was finally feeling like myself again. I walked around for hours, discovering little gems along the way, letting the city guide me into different streets and tea houses. I could breathe deeper, and I had the time to appreciate the beauty around me, rediscover my curiosity, and have new thoughts. There's a term in psychology that is called openness to experiences, that describes how likely are you to try new food or listen to new music. I now realize that this is what I needed most back in my old life. New experiences. My level of openness to experience was higher than what my old life could offer. In Japan, I was happy, but also confused. I didn't know what's next for me, and what am I going to do with my life? How am I going to afford this new lifestyle, or where am I going next? I didn't even know if I'm going to be an architect anymore, but I had no other choice but to trust the process of not knowing, make uncertainty my friend, and one day at a time, stay open and curious to whatever life brings to me. Another thing that happened in Japan was that I got completely obsessed with traditional Japanese houses. It didn't make much sense at the time because I already gave up the idea of being an architect. But I just felt so drawn to the way that the house and the garden are designed to be part of the same whole. And I allowed myself to do this irrational thing of going into different houses and temples and museums and be there and sense them and even document it. So it turned out I visited over 50 different houses in the countryside, fascinated by the various layouts and plans and the carpentry and the details. The way that this design is expressing the Zen aesthetics and the wabi-sabi, the beauty of imperfection. And it made me think, why do we prefer antiques over new things? It's almost like we could feel subconsciously the amount of time and energy and effort someone put into creating something that is their own, with their own hands, instead of a machine. And I believe that as people, we can feel that. We have this appreciation for things that are beyond our understanding. What happened next completely blew my mind. And up until this day, when I'm telling this story, I can't believe it happened to me. As I kept traveling in Japan, following my new obsession with Japanese houses, in a tiny village in the mountains, I met a couple who had just bought a hotel. You guessed it right, it was a Japanese-style hotel. As we got into a conversation, they had told me that they are planning to renovate the hotel, but they're not sure about the plan that they have in mind. When they discovered that I'm an architect, they asked me to do a consulting session for them. At the time, I wasn't sure why they're asking me, a stranger from Israel, to help them with the design of their hotel. But I was happy to use my skills and curious to see that place that I got. What they had in mind was to cancel the lobby and the common areas and to divide that space in order to create more rooms. Not because they needed them, but just because it was always empty. None of the guests ever used that space, and it added nothing to the experience. People went directly from the entrance to the rooms and then back outside. Then I did the only thing that made sense and told them that it was a terrible idea. The reason no one was using that space is because it was hidden behind closed doors. The building layout was designed in a way that someone can walk in, go directly to the room, and not even see the common areas. So of course that naturally they won't spend time there. I ended up helping them to redesign the layout of the floor, to open up the space, and create a strong invitation for people to slow down and spend some time there. The other things that we do is to change the IKEA cups that they had bought and to get some beautiful handmade teacups from a secondhand store instead. Who wants to come all the way to Japan just to drink from an IKEA cup? It doesn't make sense. I left them with clear instructions and drawings how to redesign the new spaces we created together. About a year later, they reached out to me and shared that guests are now finally using the common areas and getting to know each other. It became an important part of the experience of the guests staying in the hotel. I couldn't be happier to hear that. At the time, I thought it's just this one-time experience, but as I kept traveling in Japan, more and more similar things started to happen to me. At some point, I was couch surfing and I stayed with a couple and they were part of a group of friends who grew up in that specific village. They went abroad and decided to come back there and bring life back to that village. For that purpose, they wanted to reuse a beautiful seafront building that used to be a hospital and now was completely abandoned. When my host learned that I'm an architect, they asked me for my opinion and to create the project's program in an innovative way. We ended up doing a recorded consulting session for them, which later they presented in the city hall. I was surprised to learn how much of a value my outsider's perspective have. To see that complete strangers are excited to hear my ideas. And maybe after all, there is a future in architecture for me. I did not know exactly what, but I decided to give it a go. A few months later, when I arrived in Thailand, I decided to run an experiment. I posted on a local Facebook group of foreigners who live in Thailand saying, "Hi, I'm Adi, I'm an architect, and I'll be here for a few weeks. Let me know if you need anything." Believe it or not, it worked. People reached out to me and asked for my opinions and my skills. Thailand was the first place that I started my way as a nomadic architect. I realized I can do both. I can travel the world while being an architect. I can use my skills to help people design beautiful dream projects and do things that they believe in. All the things that I thought that were holding me back were actually the reasons that people wanted to work with me. The fact that I was a nomad myself allowed me to design for global citizens, the one who wished to express their uniqueness in both their lifestyle and their projects. Not long after, I began projects in Portugal, Guatemala, the US, and many more. The kind of projects I could only dream about a few years ago. Projects in incredible locations. Each one was unique. I love the challenge of tapping into a new culture and understanding the context. It allowed me a new kind of freedom. The more I traveled, I felt more creative. I have a friend that calls me a human Pinterest. Like I carry with me this mega database of all the things that I've experienced and all the places I've been to. And it feels right. Whenever I went, I learned something new. Ancient wisdom and building techniques, different moments that are part of a routine in a certain country. With time, I learned to tune in to my focus hours and to ride the waves of flow states, and I experienced that more often. Above all, for the first time in my adult life, I felt like I belong. I became a part of a tribe. Global citizens and change makers, one who is purpose-driven. I love being with people who are not afraid to question the paradigms we all grew up in, who are not afraid to have more questions than answers. Do you know that saying, there's nothing worse than answering right the wrong questions? I realized that the life that I left behind were exactly it. I answered so well the wrong question. A question that I didn't even came up with myself. Have you ever thought, why do you do what you do? Which questions are you trying to answer? Which patterns are you following and why? How does success look like? And who is the one that defines what is it? The places where you grew up, the places where you live, how you use your time and energy. If you had endless resources and all the time in the world, how would your ideal day look like? My guess is that the reason that you're listening to this show now is because you are too seeking something different. You know that the paradigms and systems we all grew up into are outdated. It's time. We need to rethink the way we live, rethink the way we work, how we connect with each other, the ways in which our living environments are being designed and the effect of those places in shaping who we are. We can do better. I truly believe that. We can create better places for people, places where they'll feel inspired instead of bored, places where people can thrive, live fully, and explore their potential. We can help people form deeper connections, engage with each other, and develop a strong sense of belonging. There's a saying by Seth Godin that I really like. Make things better by making better things. It led me into asking myself, how am I making things better? Being a nomad, it's not really about the lifestyle. It's not only how I live, but also how can I be of service to the world? How am I contributing into making a more beautiful world, into making the world a better place? The more I traveled, I noticed that some places has a magnetic quality. Have you ever had the experience of feeling drawn to a place? You know how sometimes you walk into places and you just think to yourself, I love it here. What is it about a place that makes you feel alive? It has this special quality to it that pulls you in. It feels inviting, relaxing, you can breathe deeper. And on that other end of that scope, have you ever had the experience of being somewhere and feeling like you can't wait to get out of there? You find yourself feeling restless, distracted, contracted. You simply can't wait to get out of there. You're not sure why. It could be too dark or too light and the air is standing still. It doesn't feel right. When you're exploring the streets of a new city, what makes you choose one street over the other? Or if you're walking inside a restaurant, where do you choose to sit? When you go on any booking platform and you want to choose a place to stay, what makes you choose one place over the other? The more I experienced places on both ends of that scope, it made me wonder, how does places affect us as human beings? You see, architecture is more than having a roof over your head. It's about humans, and it's for humans. And whether you like it or not, what we design designs us back. Design is an invitation to behave in a certain way. Everything we see, touch, and experience affect our physical and mental well-being, our heart rate, our immune system, even the way we think and process information. Think of your body as a compass. As humans, we experience the built environment through our senses. We are always inside a container, an invisible volume where life happens. When we are in nature, the container's borders may be defined by the sky and the clouds, the mountains and the trees, all together creating what we experience as outdoor space, that negative space between the objects. When we are in a city, it is defined by the street's walls, made by the facades of the building, the urban public spaces where life happens. When we are indoors, it is defined by the walls, floor, and ceiling of a room. All of those spaces, whether they are indoor or outdoor, have an effect on our mind, body, and soul. It affects the way we interact, behave, and move through space. We have multiple subconscious tendencies and behaviors that determine our response to the built environment. Did you know that each second, 11 million bits of information enter our brains? Only 50 of those enters our conscious mind. Taking into account the fact that we spend an average 90% of our time inside buildings and space triggers potential patterns of action, we must ask ourselves, what do we want to create? What kind of moments will take place in a space that we are about to create? Often when we do one-on-one workshops with our clients, we ask them to visualize not only the way they live now, but also the way they see themselves living in 5, 10 years. We call it design for moments. We try to identify what are the daily routines that are going to take place in that space and which kind of spaces are going to support those behaviors that we want to encourage. We know it by now. When we do not take active choices, someone else will choose for us. There are enormous forces everywhere we look who are competing on our attention, telling us how to feel and what to eat, what to wear, and what does it mean on how the world view us. What should we pursue in life and how does success look like? Those forces define for us what is normal and acceptable. But the good news are, more and more people are doubting those voices and rethinking independently about work-life balance, where to live and why, what stands behind our default choices in everyday life. More and more people are adopting an active mindset and act to optimize their life to what's true for them. I grew up in a half-hippie home. My mom used to take us dancing in the rain, and she co-founded one of the first eco-farms in Israel. For me, sustainable design was simply design that makes sense. Yet something was missing. The human factor seemed to be missing from the sustainable design courses that I participated in. Some of the energy efficient solutions were unpleasant. Why do we have to compromise? We can find the sweet spot between planet sustainability and human well-being. Places where people are healthy, they act differently. They are kinder, happier, and less likely to buy things they don't actually need. One of the biggest trends nowadays is maximizing human potential for a good reason. We monitor our sleep quality, our diet and vitamins level, our brainwaves, habits and thought patterns. Isn't it about time we start optimizing the built environment as well? Why is this important? You would be amazed by the way your body responds to stressful environments. While developing your next startup out of a garage may seem like a romantic idea, it might not be the optimal space for you to thrive in. If we wish to create extraordinary things, we must be in places that support us and helps us maximize the way we think. The built environment matters. I cannot stress that enough. How important the spaces that we live in are. Nourishing and well-designed spaces can help you feel rested and safe, even benefit your physical health, while draining spaces will keep you distracted, low on energy, and constantly tired. There's a famous joke about doctors and architects. It goes something like this. A doctor can bury his mistakes, but an architect can only advise his clients to plant vines. At the New Movement, this is what we do. Work that matters. Projects that are reshaping the way we live, work, and connect. Projects that are aiming to unlock human potential, amplify well-being and peak performance. To create spaces that foster deep connection to ourselves, to our bodies, and to each other, to the world we live in. There is more to the New Movement than creating beautiful buildings. In the end, it's about creating freedom in our lives. And buildings are just one piece of the puzzle. My own personal life mission is bigger than the sum of buildings I can design during my life. It's a movement that ripples worldwide, a mindset that is focused on human experience and intentional living. When we are designing a project, I am interested in everything a person is experiencing, from the moment you walk in the space, starting with the doorknob. How does it feel? Is it metal? Is it wood? Does it feel hot or cold? Does it have a texture? What kind of a handshake does it create? Often, our clients are global citizens. They're very well traveled, and the projects that they want to build are very close to their hearts. Usually, it's a project with a purpose, and it's something you care deeply about, more than just making profit. Profit is important, don't get me wrong. In real estate, of course, the bottom line has to pencil out. But what if we can create win-win situations? What if we can do better? I truly believe that the real purpose of architecture is maximizing human potential, amplify a sense of well-being, foster creativity and flow states, living places where we feel rested and happy. The New Movement is an invitation to be active, to become part of life instead of waiting to live. It's about having the clarity to know what is important to you and how you want to live your life, curating life to support you in being your best self. As the world is rapidly changing, the more we understand people, the better we can design for them. What we see, the scale of the space, the amount of daylight and the materials we interact with, all affect our behavior, sense of well-being, cognitive function and health. Let me show you a few mind-blowing discoveries that I learned over the years. There is something called the cathedral effect. The study showed that the perceived height of the ceiling affects the way we think. High ceiling makes us think in a more abstract and creative way, while lower ceilings will make us think in a more analytic and detail-oriented way. And by the way, you can use your clothes to create a similar effect. If you're wearing a hoodie, for example, and you don't feel focused enough, you just put it over your head. That's a way to lower the ceilings. Isn't it wonderful? Here's a tool you can use whenever you want to adapt the space you're in to the kind of work that you need to do. Another interesting study took place in a hospital. That study showed that a hospital room that has windows reduced the patient stays and the amount of pain medications that those patients receives. In a classroom that has daylight, test scores were increased by 25%, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. Biophilic design, cognitive psychology, and neuroarchitecture studies are powerful tools that help us gain better understanding of our responses to the built environment. These are just some of the discoveries that I had on my travels and that I keep having as I'm going deeper and deeper to the work that we do. Looking back, I'm grateful for that leap of faith. If I had stayed in my comfort zone, I would have never found all the new ways we can live in, new ways we can create, and how does it feel like to be connected to my purpose? The projects for design nowadays are dreams come true for my clients and for myself. I'm honored to help people worldwide build their dream projects, reinvent how we live, work, and connect. All that while being location independent, free to explore the world and draw inspiration from everywhere I go. I'm a collector of moments, moments that are worth living for. I'm a collector of ideas, of materials, of techniques, of different cultures. I'm a collector of ancient knowledge as well as new ideas and trends. To be able to experience that makes me feel truly rich. To be in Japan and see how the house and the garden are one and are designed to be viewed from one another. To be able to tap into Mayan culture in Guatemala and attend the ceremony they do at the beginning of each project. To be connected to the moon cycles and how it affects the way we extract colors from plants or even the time of the month in which we choose to harvest a tree, as they do in Costa Rica. There are so many secrets spread around the world waiting for us to discover them, to learn from them, and to use them in a new way. This is it for today. We're coming to an end. I hope you enjoyed today's episode, maybe learned something new about yourself or the world or architecture, and maybe even you dare to ask yourself a new question. If you did, we would love to hear about it, so feel free to reach out. You can use the contact form on the New Movement website at thenewmvt.com or simply reach out to me through my personal account on Instagram, nomad.architect.me. If you have someone in mind that might enjoy this episode, please go ahead and share it. And until the next time, I'm wishing you a beautiful day. And as always, go out and talk to strangers. Bye bye.